Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. I realize, of course, this is a break from the usual schedule. The Arsecast normally comes out on a Friday. This is a super duper extra bonus special midweek edition. Because last week I spoke to the author of a brand new book about the new Arsenal boss, Unai Emery. Is he the new Arsenal boss still? How long does he have to be in the job before we can just call him the Arsenal boss rather than the new Arsenal boss? I mean, he's new relative to 22 years of Arsene Wenger, but it was last May, I think, when he was appointed. So the current Arsenal boss, the most recent... Anyway, you know what I'm saying. It's Unai Emery, and Romain has written a book called El Maestro, in which he has got really interesting access to a lot of people in the life and around the life and career of Unai Emery, including some of his family, but people who've worked with him as a player, people who've worked with him at Sevilla, at Spartak Moscow, at PSG. So there's a very rounded picture of Unai Emery, the manager, Unai Emery, the man, the ups and downs. It's not like a fluff piece that's got to go through Emery before any of it can be published. Very interestingly, he didn't want to read it until it was finished, and Emery himself gave an interview to Romain to finish out the book. So I'm going to chat to him about the book, about how it came about, his experience of writing it, of talking to all of those people, and of course talking to Unai Emery. Coincidentally, though, this also happens to be the 500th Arsecast. This is Arsecast number 500. It began in October 2006. That was the very first, I think it was the very first Arsenal podcast. It would have been also one of the first football podcasts in general. Now every fucker's got a podcast, but I'd like to thank all of you who've been here from day one and listened to all 500 episodes. Thank you very much indeed. And even if you haven't listened to all 500, whenever you started listening, thanks for being with me throughout this hour-old journey we've been on together. And I thought it might be just interesting to go back to episode one and listen to a little bit of what it sounded like. It definitely sounds different. I listened to it just there a minute ago as I was selecting the clip. And it definitely sounds different. I sound very different, I think, anyway, to my ear. Maybe not so much to your ear, but I think I sound different. This is me from episode one back in October 2006, explaining to people the concept of an Arsecast, because even up till quite recently, you had to explain to people what a podcast was, never mind back in 2006. So this is me trying to lay it out for people. So what's an Arsecast, you might ask? Well, you know the way the blog is just me writing some shit and you come along and read the shit and everybody likes the shit? Well, an Arsecast is just me talking shit instead. You can subscribe to the Arsecast through iTunes if you have that on your computer. So every time there's a new one, it automatically downloads into your iTunes music library. Also, you can subscribe through your favorite RSS reader. And if all that sounds far too technical for you, then that means it probably is. You can just download it directly from the website every time there's a new one.
Pretty fucking heavy on the reverb there, what? Blimey. Blimey. In mitigation to the way it sounds, I didn't even have a microphone stand. I had a microphone that was propped up in a pewter mug full of pens, and I was kind of leaning into it and trying to talk into it in the right way, and that's why it was a bit poppy. I didn't have even a pop shield on the microphone. It was one of those, it's a big condenser mic, so you do need to have a good room treatment, and you need to have a pop shield and all that kind of stuff, so that's why it sounds a bit like that. But that's what the very first Arsecast sounded like, and this is what the Arsecast sounds like now. Again, just want to say thank you to everybody for listening and subscribing, for attending the live shows, for all the feedback and comments, and iTunes reviews and emails and all the stuff that's happened down the years. Thank you very much indeed. And here's to another 500. Of course, we've done 255 Arscast Extras. Or is it Arscasts Extra? What is the plural of Arscast Extra? Arscast Extras? I don't know. So we've done quite a lot of podcasts down the years, and it's been great doing them. We're going to keep doing them. We've loads more to come, and loads more, of course, on our Patreon site, which you can find at patreon.com/arsblog. If you like what we do on the podcast, you want to support everything that we do on the site, you can sign up for a fiver a month at patreon.com/arsblog. Right. Now, let's get on with the show. And as I said, I spoke to Romain Molina about his book, El Maestro. It's available in all good bookshops now. So this is me and Romain talking about the book and talking about Unai Emery. Now, I want to ask you first and foremost, when you say it's an authorized biography, can you tell me a little bit how it came about? Was it a case that you had the idea and you went along and there was some approval from Unai Emery and Unai Emery's people, or were you approached to write this specifically, not necessarily by him per se, but with his blessing?
Well, when he came to Paris, my French editor, Bertrand Pirel, contacted me and asking me if I was interested to write a book about Emery. First of all, I was unsure because I was afraid to write a biography. He asked me that because before that, I went to interview Unai Emery when he was at Sevilla. Mm. I'm French, but I'm living in Andalusia. And so, well, I started to think about the opportunity to make it. And I was very interested to talk about the life in Spanish second division, third division, the Andalusia, all these things. I was more interested by that than speaking about Unai Emery, to be honest. And I started to contact his brother, Igor, that I know for quite time, and tell him my project. And after that, yeah, he gave me his blessings. You have to know that the Emerys are people, if they give you their trust, you have it, but you have to earn it.
Okay.
But I think they so I'm honest. I didn't want to make something, you know, saying, oh, he's the greatest or he's worse. No.
Yeah.
I just let the people who know him talk, because it's not me who's making the story. I'm no one. I mean, yeah. I didn't play with him. I wasn't one of his players or one of his teammates. So my point was, I will ask the people who know him, the people who are closest to him, and also the people who are not that close to him. Because the important thing for me is to give the reader an honest thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say the truth because I don't think the truth can exist, but something very honest. And so I say that, and I ask his brother, Unai is agreed to answer for a final interview at the end of the book. It's a final interview made with all the questions and memories of all the people who know him all along his career. And they say yes, and before the publication in France, it was 1.5 years ago, they didn't read it. Unai didn't read it. The only thing he asked me is that he wanted criticism. He wanted critics, because he told me maybe I can get better with that.
Okay.
It was the only thing, but there was no other thing. I'm alone in the contract. So I put the authorized word in a way that is the first time, for example, his brother accept an interview. He accept also several interviews. It's that way. It's because the people close to him accept to testify because they say yes, but I was free to make what I want. And
yeah,
trust me, I didn't want, if you told me you can't write this kind of thing, I would say no. And I did the same after that with Edinson Cavani. It was exactly the same.
Right. I think that's a really important part of of your job, certainly, to produce a book that is, if you're striving for honesty or something that is approaching the truth, or the truth at least as you're aware of it, that really is important. I think one of the problems with football books is the fact that when you have an authorized biography, a player or a manager sits down with a journalist and they tell their story, it's ghostwritten, and they have tacit approval over pretty much everything that's in the book. How certain events are told, how the narrative of the book develops, it's it's a project for them to get across the side of the story that they want. Whereas I think that's very interesting. If Emery didn't even read the book before he sat down and had that interview with you, I suppose, A, it shows a level of trust in you as a journalist or as a writer to produce something that's fair, but also maybe a humility on his part, knowing that there would be parts of the book which might not reflect terribly well on him, he was still willing to allow those into the book.
Yeah, definitely. I think you sum up it well. First of all, especially, I'm no one. I'm very young. I'm freelance. You know, I don't work for big medias in France.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a little bit strange in a way because they didn't want to control anything. And you know that nowadays it's very complicated to make something freely, because there was a sponsor, there was a Coca-Cola, I don't know what, yeah, or maybe an approval of an agent, all this thing. Lucky enough, I live thanks to my work, and I never make a choose for money. I don't make money for a living. I want to be happy. What makes me happy is this kind of thing. And for example, when I made the book, I interviewed the people in Russia because he went to Spartak, it didn't go as well. So there's people who didn't like when I am in the book also. Mm. I also tried to contact all the people with the out an argument, but there was a lot of people who didn't want to answer. I understand that. Yeah. For example, in Paris, I made the good things he did, but also the things that maybe it wasn't that good. It's not me who's saying, it's the people who in the club, you know. Each time it was my position, because I'm no one. I mean, what's on earth can I judge a work of a manager? Because I don't know the manager. I wasn't one of his players, you know. So I can only rely to the work I made with 50 people who accept to give interview. And it's not only just interviews, say, oh, Unai is the greatest or Unai is good. No, it's details. For example, the Juan Mata things about the set pieces. It can give you a lot of insight of how he works. Because if a reader, if a person will buy a book, it's not to have a Wikipedia book.
Yeah.
If I make a Wikipedia book, well, I quit this job and I'm going to, with my mom, selling fruits and vegetables on the market, you know, because that's where I came from.
Yeah.
I want to be proud of what I'm doing.
Okay, I absolutely, I understand that. I think it's really important, you know, to have those standards, I think, when you're writing something, particularly when you're writing about somebody who you don't necessarily know. So I'm really curious as to how you feel like the character of Unai Emery has developed from the time he was a footballer to where he is now. And I think, you know, you can only judge that based on the people that you've spoken to and the interviews that you've done. And you can perhaps get one person telling you as a young man, he was like this, as a man in his 40s, he's like this. Like everybody, his character has developed and you go through changes and you mature and you think about things differently as you become a bit more world-wise, I think. But are there things, for example, that define Unai Emery's character that have been there that are constants throughout his life, from a young player through his playing career, his early career in management to PSG and to Arsenal right now?
So first of all, when you talk about the evolution of every man on planet, I think, as you say, everyone, not changing, but as an evolution, it's maybe the main point of the book, is you can see the transformation of this young player, left-sided player, winger, who was anxious. He didn't deal the pressure. In Spanish, they say he's a cagón, and someone who can't deal this kind of pressure.
Yeah,
he became someone with so full of confidence as a manager.
Mm.
So it's a remarkable progress. And he also speak about that very freely, about his weakness as a player and how he tried to work on it. And that he found that no manager helped him to live with that pressure. So for example, in his career as a manager, he's very careful on the pressure the players have. For example, with Juan Mata, it's the first season at Valencia. He has some pressure with the media, all these things. So Mata told me they work a lot to how you can deal with that pressure. After that, the words that became, that is repeating by everyone, is he love for football. Really, he has a nickname in Spain, and means el enfermo de fútbol. Enfermo is like a sick man, someone who has a disease, but in a good, they say this in a good way, you know, like he's mad for football.
Yeah.
I have one player, Laurent de Palmas, he was a right back at Almeria, and he told me, well, if the players, they fucked, well, Unai sleeps football, he eats football, he drinks football, maybe he fucks football, you know? So I think that sums up the character, that he's someone who really has a love for the game and also for the human being. He's a very social guy, he's interested to people, he reads a lot. I think he's really clever. He's an intellectual person. So I would say patient, love, intensity, and honesty. Because if he has something to tell you, he will tell you face to face. That's why he has maybe some troubles with players, because he's direct.
Yeah.
If he fucks you, but obviously he won't say that in front of all the people in the press. That's why he didn't say also very few comments in the press, because you know that can be have an influence and a negative influence on some kind of players.
Yeah.
And well, the very important fact is, I'd say, this meeting one versus one, is that, for example, in France, we say, Unai Emery, we deal with this player, et cetera, but it's because the journalists and the press didn't know what's happened behind the scenes. Because, for example, he's not a political manager. There's a lot of managers making political choice, all this thing. He's a straightforward guy. If he has something to tell, he will tell you face to face. He doesn't care. So I would say also honesty. Yeah,
those are good qualities. I mean, I
have an example.
Yeah.
For this kind of honesty.
Okay.
I think it was in Almeria. So it was in second division of Spain. You can imagine it's been 28 years that Almeria didn't play in La Liga. When I came, first season, gained promotion. Okay. So they will go to La Liga. It was a striker, Francisco, with the best goal scorer in the history of Almeria. He was, you know, like a sub player. And Unai had a meeting with him and say, well, you can train with us, but you won't play in La Liga. And so the players fucked. He told me, I said, but this manager is kooky. I mean, he's arrogant. Of course I will play. It's my town. It's my club. You know, all these things. So he laughs at Unai saying, well, try to fire me. So during the preseason, Francisco was treated like everyone. And Unai show him at training that he hasn't got the level. So after a couple of weeks, he leave the club. And after that, he became a really good friend with Unai. And when he has to make his coaching badge, you know, this thing, he called Unai first. And he told me it was very honest from him. He was face to face. He didn't send someone. He told me, I think you'll suit in the team for that reason, you know. He didn't say, oh, you should, no.
Yeah.
And maybe it's better for you to leave. And after that, he told me he was a gentleman. He let me train. He treated me like everyone else, but he showed me with that preseason that I won't play because I didn't have that level.
Yeah.
So for me, it shows honesty in a way that he act in that case like a gentleman.
That's for me. Yeah, I think that's something. Yeah, the players will respond to that, won't they? They'll respond to somebody who is straight up with them and honest. You know, most of them are mature people who can understand, even if they don't necessarily agree with a decision. I think they would appreciate it more if you're being told by somebody who's up front rather than leading you along. And many football managers will avoid that kind of conflict. They don't want
to
have that. Yeah. Well, I don't even know if it's cowardly per se. It's just maybe easier to just not play a player and let the player get fed up and let the player make the move and let the player cause the problem to make the transfer. You know, we've seen that down the years. I suppose the other side of that is how receptive is Unai Emery to the opinions of his players, for example. So if he's willing to be upfront with a player and tell a player, you're not good enough to play at this level, or I don't think you fit in this team, which is perhaps something that we've got going on at Arsenal at the moment with Aaron Ramsey and his situation.
Yeah.
What is he like if a player is honest with him? Is it a case that he's such a disciplinarian that only what he says goes, or is he willing to listen and is he willing to accept the opinions of others?
I will tell you one story in Sevilla. So he came at Sevilla. It was in, I think, in January. The club was in mid-table. Dressing room was chaos. And, well, he made some meetings with his players. And he asked his players to tell what they think about the team, about how we can be better. And there was one player, defender, named Juan Cala. I think he went for Cardiff a little bit, but well. Mm. And he told me that at first he was afraid because he wanted to criticize something when the trainings. And he did, finally. And he told me the reaction of Emery and his coaching staff was great. They told him, yeah, maybe you're right. But he said to his partner, and you, what do you think? So there was players who didn't care about that, but there are also players who cares. And his coaching staff and I did it to see if the players cares. So they listen to their opinions, to everything, because they're not blind coach. For example, their managers, I won't quote a Portuguese manager in Premier League, that it's his way or no way.
Yeah.
When I listen to his team, maybe too much in Paris, that we can, maybe a critique we can make, but it shows that, for example, you can criticize him, but he will listen. Why are you doing this? Why do you think we can be better? In all this thing. And I give you another example. In Sevilla, do you know the Colombian striker, Carlos Bacca?
Yes.
Striker. So it was a game. Bacca was a sub. He enters and he didn't make good game. So after the game, when I told him in front of everyone, you let us down. You let me down. You let your partners down. You let the crowd down. And Bacca was upset and they started to have an argument, real argument. The players are separating them. And Bacca insult Unai Emery with a really ugly insult. So how you deal with a player who lack of respect in front of everyone? So the day after that, he calls Bacca to have a meeting face-to-face in his desk office. And he told me, Unai, that he wanted to see if Bacca apologized, not for him, but for his partners, for the club, and for the public, for the way he played. And he told us, well, I can forgive because, of course, when you're upset, sometimes you say things you don't really think. So they have a good chat. And after that, Bacca made his best season of his career. And Bacca, after he leaves Sevilla, wanted to work again with Emery. So it shows how we can work with the pressure and also management in crisis situation. For example, my player was very upset and he lost his mind in a dressing room. I can deal with that. And he deals face to face. So for me, it's very interesting. And maybe in France, it's also why it's part of criticism. Because that kind of anecdotes and that kind of insight, I have it because I made a lot of work to obtain that. So when you listen to that, you say, oh, so this man has some balls. He's not a coward, guys.
Sure.
This guy is loyal. I mean, he has something. But of course, when you listen to him in press conference, you say, fuck, he say nothing very interesting, all this thing.
That's a very interesting point. I was going to ask you a couple of things, but I'll ask you about this first. Because we've been used, at Arsenal, we've been used to Arsene Wenger, who, as you know, is a very experienced, but very intelligent and very interesting man. Whatever you think about his quality as a football manager over the last part of his Arsenal career, he was always very engaging, somebody who you could find interesting at press conferences. He would often be asked about things which weren't necessarily anything to do with football or to do with Arsenal, perhaps society or politics or the world or whatever it might be, and he was always able to provide an interesting answer. So his press conferences were enjoyable. At the moment with Unai Emery, it's quite difficult to scratch the surface of what it is that he's saying. Now, I want to ask you specifically, because he's got I won't say a problem with English. He's still learning English. He's still very much in the part of his life in England where he's learning English, and his English is a little bit idiosyncratic. It's a little bit difficult to parse from time to time. You get the idea of what he's saying, but as yet, and it's completely understandable, he doesn't have the range of expression or the fluency to talk in the way that he will talk in a year's time or 2 years' time. I think we all understand that. But just from the way that he answers questions and the way that he answers things in press conferences, should we expect him to be more expansive? Should we expect to get to know a bit more about Unai Emery, the man? Or is he always going to deal with the football issues on the surface and not really go much deeper than that?
Well, first of all, I don't know if you read or saw his interview face-to-face, you know, individual interviews he made all along his career, because they're fantastic. And he's really... There's the Unai Emery press conference and the Unai Emery one-versus-one interview.
Okay.
It's very different. I think in the book, in the last interview he gave me, I think is very, very interesting. The thing is, in France, he had a lot of troubles with the press. And trust me, I'm not here to defend Unai Emery. I think this guy don't need anyone to defend what he did in his career. But you can imagine that in French TV, in live, there's people treating him like a monkey, saying, oh, he's a monkey. He's as clever as a monkey. Because in France, you know, we're very arrogant. I'm French, I can say that. We're arrogant. And no, it's true. And we don't treat foreign coach, I don't understand. For example, Marcelo Bielsa, he's made a tremendous work at Leeds. I think everyone agrees in England that he has something. Well, in France, we make fun of him, saying like, a guy like Marcelo Bielsa, who inspired Guardiola, all this big coach, well, no, he's like an imposter. So Ancelotti, we treated him not that great too. And Unai, for example, there was a problem in France. Well, you have no job. Oh, it's raining. Maybe it's Unai's fault. Really? You think that everything that happened in PSG was because of Unai Emery? His fault. It was very complicated. And it's a point of the book, is because his brother, Igor, he was contacted by some French journalist saying, well, give us some information, give us the 11 we will play, etc., and we will be nice with your brother. So it's like French journalist blackmailed, in a way, tried to blackmail the people close to Emery. And as I told you, the Emerys are very loyal, are very... If they give you their word, you can sure they will accomplish it. But... You have to earn it, the confidence and everything. And this kind of manager, they say no. And honestly, they try to kill him. And in the club also, I spoke to people, director of the club, everything was shocked, because it seemed that everything was his fault. So I think he was so in trouble with the press. Each sentence he did, it was a polemic. For example, once, because he had some difficulties with the French language at the beginning, and once time he took a bottle of water to explain him. The night, his brother received a call from a journalist saying, well, I imagine it was premeditated for the buzz. So you can imagine how we have clever in France. We think that the manager of a top club trying to make buzz on social media. And I mean, you have to be fucking stupid to think that. But that's the kind of journalist we have in France. So... He choose to say absolutely nothing, and it's also, you have to understand, that's the pressure. I told you how to deal with the pressure and the press. For example, if a player is criticized by the press, maybe he will react in a way that is maybe more selfish on the pitch. Maybe, oh, I have to score goals to prove they're wrong, all these things. So he thinks a lot about that, and he didn't want to make polemics or this thing. So I don't think you will have, in press conference, great things. But in one versus one interview... is really great.
Oh, okay, we look forward to that. I want to ask you about the time at PSG, but first I want to ask you about Spartak Moscow, and that's part in the extracts of the book that I've read. Those are the parts where perhaps there's a bit more criticism of him than from the people who worked with him in Spain. Now, one of the things that he said straight away when he came to Arsenal, he said the one thing I can promise you is that we'll work hard. So we'll work hard, and it will be hard work, and it's hard work and working hard, and we get that, and it's great. And the thing about the Spartak Moscow thing, I think Dmitry Popov said there was a lack of discipline. And from what we can see in these very early stages at Arsenal is that, look, Emery's not like a sergeant major. He's not an army man in terms of his discipline. But what he has done is impose his authority on the squad, where he's come in and everyone who was a favourite of Arsene Wenger doesn't necessarily mean it's a favorite of Unai Emery. Everybody has been treated equal, so there is that kind of authority that you put on a squad. So was it a case that he didn't necessarily understand the Russian culture, the Russian mentality, or was it just a case that he was at the wrong club at the wrong time?
I think both. I think when it came to Spartak, there was a complicated club because it was a war between Valery Karpin, who was the sporting director and wanted to be the manager, and Unai Emery.
Yeah,
there was, you will see in the book, honestly, at once, he was maybe afraid to be that someone is following in the street. It was very strange, the atmosphere there. And all the managers at this year's failed in Spartak. The thing is, when Popov said he wasn't tough enough for Russian culture, and the thing is, with the Russian league, you have to put a number of Russian players. And these Russian players didn't have the discipline for Unai Emery, so he benched some of them. And after that, they will make, maybe a row against him. It was very hard with the Russian players. The thing is, I don't think he was tough in the sense that, for example, after they lose, Popov told me, in Russia, you can't smile. You can't be positive. Mm. And Unai is every time he's positive. So there was a chunk of culture. Especially also the Russian, all this thing. So I think he lacks of, not work, but he thought that his method in Spain will work in Russia. He was wrong. So he made a big mistake there. He didn't took the time to know where he's coming from. And this kind of mistake, he didn't make it in Paris,
yeah.
And also in Arsenal. I can tell you, he studies the history of Arsenal, everything, also in London, because he knows that the football is not feel the same way as you can be from Moscow, London, even in London. I think the fans are quite different from Chelsea, Tottenham, Barnet, Leighton Orient, all this club. So the point is, he learns from that mistake he made in Russia because he was. And that's, I also wanted to point it in the book, that to give the word to the Russian people to see why he was a failure in Spartak. Because I think it's important, because after that, he changed a lot of things. And after that, he was starting to listen more and more and more about all these players, all these things. And you can see in Arsenal, he didn't destroy, he didn't erase the work made by Arsene Wenger, the legacy of Wenger.
Yeah.
He just tried to add something new. I don't like to make comparison, but if you take a Portuguese manager in Premier League, it's quite different.
Yeah.
When he came to a club, it's like, oh, I erase everything because now we're doing my way.
Mm.
Unai, I'm coming to Arsenal, glorious club. I will build something with my touch, but not without erasing what happened before.
I suppose the thing about it is that he went to Spartak Moscow. It didn't work out for him, and then went to Sevilla and had a very successful period where we all know he's won three Europa Leagues in a row. Which is an amazing achievement. Some people might say, okay, he couldn't make the team progress in the Champions League, but winning that competition three seasons in a row is really fantastic. Then to PSG, where I suppose you can't say it was a failure at PSG.
No, he wasn't.
He wasn't, even though I think there is a certain perception that maybe he didn't quite achieve as much as he should have achieved. He didn't win the league in his first season there, for example, which is what everybody had expected, and they had wanted clearly at PSG for the club to make progress in the Champions League, and they didn't really do that. There was that incredible, crazy game against Barcelona. You know, but he did win trophies at PSG. So maybe the Spartak Moscow situation was one from which it was a step backwards to take a step forwards. And I'm not saying that, you know, PSG was a failure in any way, because clearly it wasn't when you just look at the numbers. But just in terms of the perception, I mean, do you think that will... Again, some of the criticisms that he encountered there are a very strange situation at a very strange club run by very strange people who who have a very strange star player who casts a shadow over everything. You know, it's a very difficult thing for any manager to deal with.
It's impossible. I will tell you why. But first of all, I think in PSG, Unai gave the seven. He gave his note when we asked him. He said, "Well, I put myself a seven. He was good, but he wasn't that good." I think he's right. But first of all, Monaco, when they won the title in Ligue 1, they made semi-final of Champions League. This famous win against Manchester City in Champions League with Falcao, Mbappe, all these players.
Yep.
Monaco has the second best points ever in the French Championship. So it was the second best team in all the history of French League, if you look at the points they have. So even the years before that, Paris won the champions. So I don't think it's the fault of the manager if he... Because it was very complicated his first season. He lost Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Wasn't only the star on the pitch, but off the pitch. Off the pitch, he was the king. He was the man who would put discipline on the club. He also lost David Luiz. The dressing room was very complicated in Paris because there was no boss, there was no authority.
Yeah.
Thing is, of course, he had troubles with some players, especially Thiago Silva, the captain. I have my opinion on Thiago Silva, but it's not my opinion. It's the opinion of former players, teammates he still have, and employees at PSG. I think he's one of the most disliked player at the club ever. Amazing player. Amazing player.
Mm.
Little man. That's four people in PSG. Four people, not one or two. Four people, including three teammates, told me about Thiago Silva. Off.
Yeah.
Because he's very selfish. So he had trouble with Unai because Unai wanted to adjust some kind of play. For example, Thiago Silva is a marvelous player. We all agree about that. And he's very technical. So Unai wanted to take some risk with the first pass, you know? But Silva never takes risk. He always plays the security. And sometimes he waits deeper in his own field. So there's trouble, especially the game in Barcelona. So they had some long chats. And after the first season, Unai told Thiago Silva and his president, "You can stay here. If you stay that mentality, you can't." And about his captain, and look at the Real Madrid game in Champions League. They went to Santiago Bernabeu. He benched his captain. He benched Thiago Mota in that game for youngsters. Presnel Kimpembe, who was at the won the World Cup with France, and Giovanni Lo Celso was a young Argentinian player. So he made some choice at PSG, but it was very hard to work there. I mean, there were players like Thiago Silva, if they're unhappy, they call the president, and the president say, "Oh no, don't worry, make what you want." So you can put all the manager you want on earth, but if the club is working like that, the manager can't have any authority.
Mm.
I mean, it's a club. I will tell you some anecdotes to see. It's a great club, PSG. It's a great club, great history. Fans amazing, wonderful stadium, wonderful players. But the people running the club are from tennis. I have nothing against tennis, of course. But one of the most trusted advisors of Nasser Khelaifi didn't know 2 years ago what was the offside rules. So the number two of the club, of a football club, doesn't know the offside rules. The number three of the club, named Adel Aref, he didn't know 3 years ago that football is a sport of a team of 11 against a team of 11. I mean, how on earth is possible? How on earth is possible? We have another example. And the youngsters, there's a father of a youngster who worked for the club. He's smoking weed on the training ground of PSG. So there's one educator saying, report it. And the direction say, "Oh no, you can't say nothing to him." What? The guy smoke weed. I mean, on the training ground, around the youngsters, among the childs. And yeah, the club say, "Oh no, we can't say nothing to the father."
Well, look, a crazy situation.
So I give you some, it's little facts to show you that, oh, I know all the clubs, sometimes it's a mess, but it's really a mess.
Mm.
You don't know how to use a lot of war of influence behind the scenes. So Unai, he had one problem in Paris. Is that sometimes maybe he listens too much to his teams because he I think he's really someone who likes democracy, but the real one, you know, when you listen to everyone, of course, he's the manager, so it's him who has the final word. But he listens to his squad, and the problem in Paris is that the players are too powerful. And I mean, imagine, for example, you Arsenal sing the big star. Do you think the board of Arsenal will put lights on Big Ben saying, "Oh, welcome to the new player"? Like PSG did for with the Eiffel Tower with Neymar?
Well, look, no, I don't think our owner would spend that money, to be honest. either on the player or Big Ben.
Yeah, but I mean, it's like Hollywood.
Yeah, it is. Look,
I don't think it was, if I can finish, I don't think it was suited that much for that club. I think it's really suited for Arsenal's club. And I think maybe Thomas Tuchel, 9 PSG, was also troubled with the direction, with everything. He wanted a midfielder. He didn't have midfielder during the transfer because it was very complicated. And now in France, people started to understand that the PSG had a lot of problems. I mean, Ancelotti failed in Champions League. Laurent Blanc failed in Champions League. Unai Emery failed in Champions League. And for the moment, they only third in their group stage of Champions League.
Mm.
So that shows that the fault is not the manager, but more the global problem.
So look, you said that Arsenal is a club that you think will suit him. If it was a strange situation at PSG, it's also a bit of a strange situation at Arsenal because Arsene Wenger was there for so long, and any manager who comes in after a manager who's been there for such a long time has a more difficult job because you're the next man. As we saw with David Moyes at Manchester United, the job was just too big for him. I think Manchester United in general is certainly a bigger club than Arsenal, so I'm not saying that's the case with Unai Emery, but it wasn't a case that he was coming in, it was all roses in the garden. It was a difficult situation for him to come in, particularly as his appointment was something of a surprise, that he wasn't really somebody whose name had been mentioned, and everybody was talking about Mikel Arteta, and there were some other names out there, Allegri, and then all of a sudden it was Unai Emery. What exactly, just very briefly before we go, what makes you think that Arsenal is a club which suits Unai Emery, and also Unai Emery as a manager that might suit Arsenal?
First of all, what I said about Paris, I repeat it, fantastic club. It's just owned by dishonest people. But it's a case of many clubs. That's the first thing. And as I told, he made some good things in Paris, some not that good things. Okay. Now, but Arsenal, as you say, is not all rose in the garden, especially now with Gazidis leaving, because Arsenal is changing since a couple of years with the sporting director, Raoul Sanley, I don't know if I pronounce it well.
Mm.
The two people who now running the transfer is Raoul and Sven, if I'm correct.
Yes, so Sven Mislintat. Yeah.
We're in a club, also with the ownership, that is currently have an evolution. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, for me, my point of view, Arsenal is a massive club in the way that it wasn't only the first professional club in London. It was much more than that. It was Arsenal Wenger brought a legacy of how the game should be played, of how a club must be run, must be managed. Maybe we can criticize that, but it gave a real image of what is Arsenal, real DNA. But as you say, it wasn't that great at the end. Okay. But I think it's very hard, first of all, to pass after someone like that. We see that in Manchester United, for example, after leaving of Ferguson. But I think, first of all, there's no the shadow of Arsene Wenger at Arsenal like David Moyes had the shadow of Sir Alex Ferguson at Manchester United, first of all.
Yeah, Wenger's not there.
You can't compare David Moyes and Unai Emery's career. I mean, Emery won titles almost everywhere except in Spartak.
Sure.
So he's experimented. He knows the foreign experience. Why I say he's suited to that club is because, in my point of view, Arsenal is a part of the beautiful game. Arsenal, when I remember growing up, watching the Invincibles and a lot more, the way they play football is the way Unai Emery likes football. And with the squad he had, of course, he's not the best squad of the Premier League. I think we all agree about that, especially defensively.
Yeah.
But he has the kind of player with the good mentality, with the mentality he likes. Petr Cech, Nacho Monreal, but also Lacazette. He wanted Lacazette at Paris also.
Yeah.
The kind of youngster like Guendouzi, Torreira, Holding, Xhaka. Well, Xhaka is not that young, but you understand.
Yeah.
He will be. So he has the kind of player who are ready to say, I want to be better. So what I have to do to be better? So he can work as a coach, as a real coach. And that's the thing he loves. And when I see the Arsenal games this season, they weren't that great. Sometimes it was complicated, but I saw team spirit. I saw something. I saw brave people. I saw people were trying to fight for my teammates. Mm. The best example is Torreira or Lacazette. Maybe Lacazette don't score at every games, but he works his socks off for the team. Maybe he made mistakes in the game against Crystal Palace, but he wasn't selfish. And I think that's very important because his team is currently responding well to what is waiting for his team. So I think he's suited in that way. And because also, he's not... I mean, if you list the top manager in the world, maybe Unai Emery is not in the top five, but we know he's a good manager. He wins almost everywhere. He has a reputation of a gentleman. And I think Arsenal needed someone after Wenger who plays also the beautiful game in a way that Unai Emery is not a manager who makes the transfer fee. He's not a guy spoken with agent, and he's not a manager like, unfortunately, we see too much in England, the Harry Redknapp, Sam Allardyce style.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of that.
Good.
He has something pure about him. And that's why I think he's suited to Arsenal. Maybe, I don't know, it's a new structure now in Arsenal, Gazzi's leave. So we have to see, because obviously, Unai wants more perfection. He wants more, he's exigent. He wants more, how can I say that? He's perfectionist. He cares about all the details.
Sure.
There was great works about Arsenal, but they need to improve. And I think Unai can help the club improve on that kind of details. And also, Arsenal seems to be a perfect spot for him. I mean, it's a great club. You leave Paris, going to Arsenal, it's not a step back for me. Mm. Definitely.
Well, look, we're still very much in the early days or the early months of what Unai Emery is doing. So it's going to be very interesting to see if he can impose that
especially
kind of...
at the beginning of season.
Yes, of course.
Games, especially the Chelsea game was, yeah. Honestly, when you see the first half, you say, they lose. So he had a lot of pressure after Wenger, this thing. And now they didn't lose a single game. And especially because of the team spirit. And you can see that the team is getting a little bit better offensively. Defensively is still very complicated for me. But offensively, you can see that. You can see also that the team is reacting well to the turnover he made, because he made a lot of turnover.
Mm.
And I think it's very important that he benched Ozil, he benched Ramsey, he benched Aubameyang. That's a strong choice.
Mm.
For the moment, the players are responding well.
Yeah.
And for example, Ozil was furious to be subbed in the last game against Crystal Palace. And you know what? Emery loved that kind of reaction, because if the player didn't care if he plays or not, he's not implicated in the team.
Sure, I understand.
The players show, I want to play more. I want more. It's good, and he likes to work on that.
Yeah, that's curious. I do wonder, and I have wondered throughout the start of this season, if some of the decisions he's made aren't explicitly for football reasons. You know, or for tactical reasons, they're to try and gauge the character of some of the players that he has.
Yeah. Can you repeat, please, because I didn't hear the last sentence.
Well, I think some of the decisions that he's made aren't necessarily just for football or tactics. They're a way for him to see the character of the players that he has, to gauge how they react in situations like that, so he can get a more rounded view of who they are.
Definitely. He's someone who loves the psychological aspect. He's a good reader. He reads almost 2 or 3 books a week sometimes about psychology, how to manage a group, all this stuff. And so each day with his assistant, Juan Carlos Carcedo, they spoke about how we can deal with that player in his head. Carcedo told me, a player, when you discover a player, you discover like a new world, but you still don't know which button you have to push.
Yeah.
You push that button, that reaction. Okay, so maybe we have to push that button, you know? So, of course, he's starting to learn not only the player, but also the human being. Because before talking to the player, he has to talk to a human being.
Sure.
So I know he has a lot of chats with Lucas Torreira, for example, because he didn't speak English. At first, he was a little bit lost because he's someone who came from a little town in Uruguay. Very humble guy. For example, when his father came... visiting him. His father is a butcher, if I'm correct. He didn't say nothing. You know, there's some people at Arsenal who help the families. And after a while, he asked the person the question. He told him, but did my son say hello to people? He didn't ask, well, my son play well, or no, did my son say hello to people? Mm. And that's maybe summarized the character of Torreira, you know, very humble, shy guy. So I know the coaching staff is helping him a lot, you know, to adapt in his own life, all this thing. And so first of all, you spoke about the human being, and after that, maybe the player will respond better, because first of all, we're interested of who you are,
yeah.
Not Lucas Torreira, not Torreira the player, but Lucas.
Yeah, man. Sure. I get it. Well, look, it's been great talking to you, Romain. I wish you every success with the book. It's out now. People yep. can buy it. It's called El Maestro, the authorized biography. Thanks so much for talking to me. It's been fascinating.
Many thanks for the invitation, Andrew.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog.
That was Romain Molina, the author of El Maestro, the authorized biography of Unai Emery, and the publishers have very kindly given me a signed copy of the book to give away. We'll do a competition. It'll be a very easy question. Okay, tell me, which club did Unai Emery win the Europa League with 3 times in succession? Pretty simple. Tell me which club he won the Europa League with 3 years in succession. Email your answer, please, to competition@arsblog.com. That's competition@arsblog.com. I'll pick a winner out for Friday's show. If I remember, if I don't, I'll give you the winner on Monday's or Sunday's Arscast Extra, depending on whenever it is James can do the recording this weekend. So, there you go. Hope you enjoyed this. A special bonus edition of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed this 500th edition of the podcast. Again, my sincere thanks to everybody who's put up with me all this time. I appreciate it a huge amount, because otherwise I'd just be some mad weird guy in my office talking into a microphone with nobody listening. So knowing you guys are out there and downloading and subscribing and everything else every week, it means a great deal. So thanks again. I will have a podcast on Friday. It'll probably be a little bit later on Friday morning, because of course we are playing on Thursday night against Sporting in the Europa League, and chances are I'm going to need to organize things for Friday morning. The plan then will be to get the podcast up at some point before lunchtime on Friday. So look, it's all out of my hands. It's not my fault. I didn't make us qualify for the Europa League, but hopefully next season we can get back to normal, playing Champions League football and having an uninterrupted Friday podcast schedule. So that's it. Anyway, look, thanks again. Catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Hello everyone. It's me, Arsen van der Houten. I can't believe this is the 500th episode of the ArsCast. I remember the very first one, all those years ago. That youthful exuberance. The unbridled optimism that Arsenal might win the league again. Perhaps even get to another Champions League final or two. That the club would retain its best players. That the new stadium would help fund a new era of success and achievement. And look where we are now. Just look. I mean, all this time has gone by, yet nobody has asked the most obvious question. Why hasn't this baldy Irish wanker found something better to do with his time? He's worse than a dolphin that loves Phil Collins. Oh yes. P.S. John Terry is a cunt.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.